This is Scenic Roots. I'm Ray Bassett. Thanks for joining us. On a 50-acre farm at the foot of Raccoon Mountain, just 10 minutes away from downtown Chattanooga, a new school where nature is the classroom opens this month. Nature Kin Farm and Forest School will provide outdoor learning for children ages 9 to 11. The founder is Dr. Jean Lomino, founder and former director of the Wauhatchie School. I spoke with her and Clark Brewer Jr., the founder of Humans Outdoors, a program that introduces people of color to the outdoors. Jean, Clark, thanks for joining us.
Thank you, Ray.
Thank you for having me.
Jean, tell us more about Nature Kin Farm and Forest School.
Oh, I would love to tell you all about this. Wauhatchie School began in 2015, and the original vision was that we would not only have forest school, but we would also have farm and forest. And so now that Wauhatchie School is kind of out there on its own, the board is now running it. There's a new director, Maria Gonzalez, and she's doing a wonderful job. Now I'm back to where it started. So back to Lookout Lake, where we started Wauhatchie School, and Diana Rowell Meadows is the co-founder of Wauhatchie School. And she's also working with me to get the farm and forest school started. So it's very exciting. And Ray, just a little bit more information. I was inspired when I went to see schools in China and Korea, because there was such a focus on gardening, on culture. And I thought that's kind of the missing piece in our forest schools for the most part here in the United States. So that really is where I started thinking about the farm school being something that should happen really soon. So we're really excited to be able to offer this now to Chattanooga, part of a network of schools. So it will be part of that network. Nature Kin Pocket Forest Schools is an arm of the Forest School Teacher Institute. So that's our training. So the schools now that are established under that umbrella become model schools and training sites as well. So the school here, the Farm and Forest, will be a training site for teachers who want to know more about how do you incorporate gardening and animal husbandry into the forest concept.
And Clark, tell us more about your involvement in all this.
I met Jean, I think, through a mutual person. I reached out. Jean and I kind of had the same passion and heart for the outdoors. I know Jean has always been wanting to make this available for every child, no matter where they're from, no matter what skin color they have. I already shared that passion with Humans Outdoors. Jean and I talked, we spent time, we shared ideas, we brainstormed. And my vision of wanting to see more kids in the city of Chattanooga, I know, have access to the outdoors, whether that's after school modeling, whether that's weekend modeling, whether that's family events, we decided to just collab and come together and partner.
It was really kind of an instant recognition that we shared the same idea and passion. And always there's this idea that the more partnerships we can develop, the more people we can reach out to, the bigger and the faster this idea will grow. Kind of backing into the pandemic situation, you and I think our last conversation, Ray, was how this created a surge in interest in outdoor school and nature-based school. Well, that surge has obviously continued because these programs are continuing to grow all across the country and around the world. So the feeling that children need to be in nature, that families need to be out there more, the benefits, the health benefits, the social, emotional benefits, and the cognitive benefits of getting children ready to learn and also to extend their learning in these spaces. So the more Clark and I talked, the more we realized, yes, indeed, that's exactly what we want to see happen. And we feel like Chattanooga is the place to set up this model, the partnership between what Clark is doing and what I'm doing, to be able to reach into these communities. And like Clark says, reach families, reach neighborhoods, reach schools. And that's nature kin. We believe we're all kin, everyone. And if nothing else, the pandemic really illustrated that fact that we are this global community of people and that nature is a part of that community. So that's the idea of the Nature Kin name, that we are all kin, we're all connected. And to help children even see those connections in nature, it just builds on that idea of what is community and how important is that.
And when you factor in the name Humans, and I spell it H-U-E, people of all shades and hues and colors, all kinfolk, Jean and I, you know, we had our names, we had our separate things before we met each other. And then Universe definitely brought us together with our names actually tying in together with the same kind of, it's hard to explain. It'll probably sound crazy if you knew how connected and aligned it was and how it happened and how it's happening even right now.
And the community for this type of learning is also growing. One of our recent conversations about the River Gorge Forest School. And Gene, I know from the founders of that school, which will be opening, they turned to you.
They did. And I was so thrilled too. And Susie Grant and I know each other from long ago. And it was just exciting to be able to work with her and these passionate people there at the River Gorge who are providing the property for the school to be conducted there. So again, this is the idea of these pocket forest schools. So these little schools everywhere. And the idea is that nature's everywhere. It's in the middle of the city. It's out in the country. It's on the beach. It's in the mountains. It's everywhere around us, in the cracks in the sidewalks. So it's helping people be inspired, particularly adults. How can we recognize a nature that's right there where we live? And then how can we get children engaged with it? And so what we're trying to do is provide expert guidance, inspiration, collaboration. So our new program will be a global website, and we're going to bring people together from all around the globe to talk about how they're doing this and what their challenges are and how we can all work together to make it happen.
And how does this model build to the next level from where Forest Kindergarten leaves off?
Preschool is the perfect place to start when those children are just developing their emotional and social connections, when they're making connections with nature, with each other. But then also middle school, there are these transition points in children's lives. And so Clark has been focused on middle school and older children. And I've kind of started out with the younger ones, but most of my teaching career has been with middle school and older children. So I really have a heart for that too. So this model can fit into any school program anywhere, and it already is. There are schools all around us who are already taking children outside, older and older children, from second, third grade, all the way up into high school. STEM is a great avenue for a lot of these schools to incorporate the outdoors into their programming. But my goal, and I know Clark's goal, is to help these older children have that time to just explore on their own and to be mindful.
The transitional age is very important to me. As soon as a child comes out of fifth grade, of being, I guess you could say, the senior, you can call it the top dog or the head honcho, going right into sixth grade, getting slapped back down to freshman. That's a real big emotional, mental, psychological thing, as well as eighth graders going right into ninth grade and becoming freshmen again. So that transitional age can be very tricky because for some, it works and they develop properly and they adjust properly. But for some, it's intimidating, it's depressing, it's stressful, etc. So like Gene said, me kind of being around middle schoolers these last couple of years and Gene kind of being more K through, the model is definitely there with both before transition and while transitioning with the model that we have.
And both are equally important for sure. I mean, these are critical.
Very important. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. And nature just provides that balance. And that's why I feel like it's so important, because they have these opportunities to reflect and just sit quietly and think their own thoughts. I mean, to me, that's kind of what's missing, because in traditional schools, it's all about keeping them busy, keeping them on track, getting the next level, finishing this and finishing that. Whereas forest school also has that definite academic connection, because you can teach anything out here, anything. All context for all learning you can provide in a natural setting in nature. But just those opportunities, again, to be still, that's critical and key for children at all stages of their development.
What's the timeline for getting this all started?
Well, the Farm and Forest School is actually starting. We're following Hamilton County's schedule. So we are starting August 12th is our first day. And Clark and I now are working hard to start planning how we're going to reach out to our community partners, whether they're churches or other organizations who can help sponsor a child from an underserved neighborhood to be a part of the Farm and Forest. So that's what we're looking for now, talking to people. And I think Clark's already started.
And to some of these predominantly Black-owned churches that I grew up knowing and seeing, introducing the idea that there's actually four schools out here in Chattanooga. Some of them don't know. The more I've talked about it, Gene has done so much great work. There's so many other people that are doing four school ideas, but introducing into the community of where I come from is new and kind of foreign sometimes. So it's actually, like Gene said, it's already started.
The Farm and Forest School has been developed to begin with like fourth grade through sixth grade. So I decided to start with the older children for this program. And then after this year, we'll see whether we go up in grades, down in grade levels. I'm not sure yet what it's going to look like. But I think to offer this to older children is important right now. So again, we're looking for older children, say 9 to 11, 8 to 12, in that range, to be a part of our school. When they come to our school, they will be gardening. They will be working with animals. We have goats and chickens and bunnies, and hopefully we'll have a donkey soon. And they'll also be growing their own food, harvesting their food. It'll be project-based learning, which is in all my years of teaching, almost 50 years now, I've been able to identify what I think are the most effective ways and the most fun ways for kids to learn in school. And project-based learning is one of those. So children will each have a project. It'll be a research project. It'll be tied into what they've discovered in their own explorations. And then the final thing that we're all doing together is we're going to have a farm store, a farm stand here. So the children will even be able to sell their produce. They'll learn how to run a business, make a business plan. All kinds of accounting and math will be incorporated in that. I get to bring in all those great things that I know about teaching and about learning into this one program.
And where can people go online for more information?
Well, we have a little website set up for the Farm and Forest School. So it's farmandforestschool.org. And Nature Kin is going to be launching very soon. We don't have an exact date, but I'm hoping in within a month that will be launched. And we'll have a website address for that as well soon.
All right. Gene, Clark, thanks so much.
Thank you, Ray.
Thank you, man. Thank you for having me.
Two Montessori schools will open in the Chattanooga area this month. Classes begin at Montessori Elementary at Highland Park on Thursday, and the first day of classes at Scenic City Montessori in Hickson will be August 16th. The founders of Scenic City Montessori are Anissa Lowry, who will be the head teacher, and Mercedes Thrush, who will be head of school. Anissa, Mercedes, thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you for having us.
Tell us more about Scenic City Montessori.
We are a new private school in Chattanooga, and we will be a middle and high school, so eventually we will have students in grades 9 through 12. Starting this year, we will accept students in grades 6 through 9.
And Scenic City Montessori is a private school, and it is also an international school, so we will be teaching Spanish. We have neighbors in the United States. Our neighbors to the south speak Spanish, and then to the north, they speak French. So we will be teaching French also.
And remind folks of the Montessori model.
There are three main components to Montessori schools, in particular to Montessori Secondary School. So the first one is the guide or the teacher, and so they need to have Montessori training. The second part is that it is a multi-year component in a classroom. So we don't just have sixth graders, seventh graders, and eighth graders. We have all of those grades in the same classroom because not every student moves forward at the same pace. This is a highly individualized education. So you have an individualized math curriculum, an individualized writing or language curriculum, and there's a great sense of community in a Montessori school. Also, we're an accepting community. We pride ourselves on accepting students as they are, helping students find that inner voice, and building community with students.
So I guess we can add that the preparing environment is also a big component of a Montessori education. And the teaching is not adult-centered, but child-centered, student-centered. So the environment in which the students engage in intelligent activity to acquire or develop tools or acquire learning is curated to meet the needs of that age group that we are serving. So with adolescents, it is curated to meet the needs of adolescents. So the learning that goes on in a Montessori middle and high school is project-based. It is done to respond to the needs, the social needs of adolescents. So they work in groups, they choose the projects they're going to work on, and we challenge their intellectual abilities by proposing an inquiry base and a very rigorous curriculum that is prepared individually to each one of the students.
Give one example of how Montessori learning differs from a traditional middle or high school.
I guess the biggest thing is the period, the concentrated period of work. So a Montessori school proposes a 3-hour concentrated period, uninterrupted period of work. Imagine the gift, right? You get to learn something and you get to practice it as long as you want to until you master it. So that's one of the biggest differences. Also, we keep saying it's individualized, and it really is. So we observe the students and we base the proposed materials, the learning, based on what we observe. And we follow the interest of that student.
And what drew each of you to this model and to working together to co-found the school?
I have 2 children, and they started off in public schools, but we didn't feel like that was a good fit for us. So we attended an elementary Montessori school here in town. And ever since they were in first grade and they are now middle schoolers, I have wanted them to have the option to continue that Montessori education. I was really drawn to that philosophy. It worked well for them, even though they are vastly different individuals. It really worked well for both of them. And so that has been my dream for a long time, and I have worked on several different avenues to bring Montessori Secondary to Chattanooga. With the pandemic, I felt like it gave us an opportunity for new avenues for education. A lot of parents have been frustrated with educational opportunities during the last year, and I think they're looking for something that's a little different. And our school is an option for them. If you do not want the traditional desk in a row, the traditional idea that there is a teacher imparting information to a student, this is much more student-centered. This is more how can I, a teacher's role, and we call them guides, is really more a role of a person who guides a student towards what they can do the best. It is a different philosophy that has a positive focus, trying to develop the human being to be the best that they can be.
Yes, the pandemic gave us an opportunity to understand that we have to rediscover ourselves. Everybody had to rediscover themselves. We all did. We had to rediscover reinvent our spaces at home, the way that we interact with each other, the way we work together, the way that we learn. We had to reinvent the way we teach, right? And so this is going to keep happening, really. We don't know how the jobs are going to be in the future. So our students really, this is what Harari is saying out there, you know. We need to be giving our students, the role of education is to give students the tools to reinvent themselves as many times as they need to. And so to do that, we need to work on developing the executive functioning. Montessori schools work on developing the executive functioning on individuals. That is, we work on giving our students experience on making decisions, weighing out how to make a decision. We keep saying that Montessori schools are student-centered learning. We integrate all the areas of study, the curriculums, the studies are really integrated. And then we provide opportunities for experiential education and application of the academic learning. So our students will have opportunities to engage in the lab that we have, which is a food truck. So our students will learn, of course, how to make a wonderful meal, but they will learn the importance of businesses, why businesses are important for this democracy. How do contracts play a part in this democracy? They will learn how to read contracts and how to write contracts, how to understand contracts. Also, they will learn the customer-facing abilities that we need to learn in any business. But, you know, the place-based learning. So we want them to have authentic adult work so they can really be ready to face the world.
As you know, You're not the only new Montessori school on the block here in Chattanooga.
We are really excited to see Montessori growing in Chattanooga. And there are several opportunities for elementary students now in the area. There's one in Eastlake. There's the new one in Highland Park. There's one in Cleveland. There's the Montessori school that's close by here that's been here for over
42 years.
Yeah, for 42 years. But the opportunity for Montessori Secondary, it has not existed in Chattanooga. It has existed in our country and worldwide. But we were really excited to bring that opportunity for students here. And Mercedes and I met 2 years ago, and we were working in a Montessori school, and we had a really beautiful friendship there. We were compatible that way, and we traveled to a Montessori conference together, and that was really when we started forming the ideas of doing this on our own.
And if people want more information about Scenic City Montessori, where can they go online?
ScenicCityMontessori.com, and also like us on Facebook and on Instagram.
And they can call for more information too, and our number is 423-403-4721.
All right. Anissa, Mercedes, thanks so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
What does Wendell Berry have to do with flowers? Morgan Sharp will tell you. She runs Creekside Flower Farm in Flintstone, Georgia, where she grows annual cut flowers for weddings and wholesalers. Morgan, thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
How did flowers become your passion?
I don't know that I would say that flowers so much are my passion. My passion is more twofold. I would say that my passion is more about being a place person, and it's more about sharing beauty with people. And flowers has been a medium for allowing both of those things to happen.
Talk more about how you realized flowers were a key to that.
So I graduated from Covenant College in 2015, and I was feeling pretty placeless. I had lived abroad before coming to Chattanooga, and so I couldn't really go back to my home abroad. My parents were still living abroad. So I was kind of looking for my place in the world and in a career as well. And I was reading a poet and author, Wendell Berry, who talks a lot about being a placed person. And he talks about how digging into the land can enable you to become placed. And so I thought, okay, cool. Maybe I should literally dig into the land to see if that can help me become a placed person here in Chattanooga. And so I started doing that through farming. Meanwhile, I also have always had just this rich, deep appetite for beauty in me. I actually think it's just a human need. I think male, female, it doesn't matter who you are, what you are, you need beauty. And I think that that is most satisfied through natural beauty. And so flowers were a way for me to kind of meet my need to become a placed person and to meet other people's needs as well, to have beauty in their lives.
Your parents were missionaries in Nicaragua.
Yep. I grew up in high school abroad. The rest of my life I spent in the United States. I have a more global eye for beauty from living abroad. I would say that living abroad enabled me to experience and see differences as being really beautiful. And so even today, when I'm out in my field looking at my flowers, there are often kind of mutated flowers or flowers that are just a little off. And I think they're the most interesting of the bunch. Oftentimes, it's not the flowers that I sell. Those are the ones that I cut and take to my house. But I think living abroad just gave me a greater sense of breadth for what beauty can look like. I feel like my version of beauty is not as narrow as it would be if I had only lived in one place my whole life.
Describe flower farming and how that's different when most people hear the word flowers. Most people hear the word flowers, they think of something that they buy from a florist or that they grow in their own garden.
It's a great question. Most people's eyes glaze over when I say that I'm a flower farmer. I think all they think about is the flower part of farming. Flower farming is like any farming. It is dirt and sweat and soil and so many things that are potentially unpleasant, like bee stings and sun and humidity, all of it. But I love it. To me, flower farming is the outdoors. It's just getting to be outside, and I don't really care what the elements are. To me, that keeps it interesting. The variability is part of the learning curve and part of the thing that keeps me constantly engaged, because I'll never have it fully figured out. There's too many variables.
How much do you grow at any given time?
I actually did the numbers recently. My plot of land is less than half an acre, and I don't actually know how many stems of flowers I'm producing at a time off of that, but I regularly have in production about 20,000 square feet of flowers.
Which types of flowers and which are favorites?
I grow upwards of 50 different varieties, and those are things like sunflowers, mostly annual flowers. I actually don't grow sunflowers, but I grow snapdragons, zinnias, celosia, coxcomb, tons of different varieties of flowers, and they change with the season for the most part. I also grow some greenery. My biggest one right now is eucalyptus. I have a huge eucalyptus niche right now that I've been enjoying.
You have been running this flower farming business for 5 years?
Yep, that's correct.
Talk more about how the experience of running this flower farming business has deepened that inspiration from Wendell Berry that encouraged you to go into this.
Yeah, I think there's the one side that has kind of fostered my love of the natural world. So now when I drive through Chattanooga, I can recognize the juniper trees and the ginkgos and all of these pieces of nature that previously I would have driven by and thought, oh, that's beautiful, but now I can name it. And I think that's one thing that I've learned from Wendell Berry is that to be able to name something is to be able to kind of hold a piece of it. So that's kind of the one side. And the other side, much more tangibly perhaps, is running a business forces you in front of people. And I am a natural introvert, so being in front of people is not my favorite place to be, but it has enabled me to meet people and talk with people that I would never have naturally met or talked to. And I think in that regard, it's allowed me to become placed because I kind of have this role of being a business owner as well in Chattanooga. And I get phone calls from random people and emails, and I love it. I love that people are reaching out to me or wanting a piece of the farm, you know, through flowers. Those are kind of two aspects of how that inspiration has unfolded.
And how would you say your sense of place, your journey to your sense of place, has been affected by the past year and a half of the pandemic?
I watched as the pandemic unfolded, people moved outside in a way that they needed. And I think it almost affirmed my belief that we need beauty and natural beauty is the best way to go. I watched people become kind of ravenous gardeners, you know, like everybody started a home garden. This past year, for the first time ever, I did a dahlia tuber sale. Dahlia tubers produce dahlia plants, which are these gorgeous, massive flowers. And I think I sold over like 2,000 dahlia tubers this past year. It was my first time ever doing it. And I was shipping them across the nation. I was shipping them to Maine and to Oregon and to California. And it was just cool because I thought this little piece of my farm is going all over. It's allowing somebody else to experience beauty in their garden. I think the pandemic definitely shook my sense of place, but it also kind of reestablished it in a new way.
Recentered it?
Perhaps, yeah. Or just maybe added to it.
And what's next?
Ooh, I would love to expand. I would love to potentially own some land at some point in time. The land market right now is astronomical and it's a high barrier to entry. But at some point, I would love to own probably 5 to 10 acres. I don't think I'll ever have more than 2 acres in production. I hope to always be the one farming. I never really want to be the bookkeeper and the one that's just doing the business side. To me, the real life-giving part of it is to farm, and I don't think I could do that if I went past 2 acres. But I'd love to expand. I'd love to have greenhouses. I'd love to extend my season. I would love to offer ways of having people onto my farm on a regular basis. Whether that's through some sort of membership program, I have no idea. Those are just kind of dreams that I'd like to unfold as time passes.
Are there flowers? Are there plants that you've thought about for the farm but just haven't gotten to yet?
Oh, absolutely. Perennials, pretty much the whole perennial world I've stayed away from because they're a very expensive investment. Perennials are the flowers that stay in the ground year-round and they come back from year to year. And oftentimes they take several years to establish. So something like a peony, you buy the bare root of the peony and you plant it in the ground, and then you actually wait 3 years before you get full production out of a peony plant. So I've never really gotten into the world of perennials because I don't own my land, and so I'd like to wait till I own land before I really make big investments like that.
In the meantime, if people want more information, where can they go online?
CreeksideFlowerFarm.com. And I send out a monthly newsletter of just kind of farm happenings and things that have intrigued me or happened at the farm or will be happening at the farm over the next month or so.
All right. Morgan, thanks so much.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
You're listening to Scenic Roots. More in a moment.
This is Scenic Roots. This afternoon we have the second half of the show from the Isis Music Hall in Asheville, recorded on July 24th, featuring South for Winter. According to their bio, the two principals in South for Winter, guitarist Nick Stone, who is from New Zealand, and singer Danny Kishon, who is now Danny Stone. She and Nick have married since this bio was written. Danny is from Colorado originally. The two met when they were volunteering building greenhouses in South America. They wrote their first song together in South America on a Peruvian rooftop. The song called Fallen Seeds was released as their first single. After moving to Nashville, they met and started working with cellist and singer Alex Stradahl. And that is the trio that is again on this afternoon's program from the Isis Music Hall. This is South for Winter.
We are going to stick with a happy theme for another song. So Nick is from New Zealand, I'm from Colorado, and we are actually married. If you
didn't get some of the banter on stage.
And we did actually write a song for the wedding that we had in Colorado, and we had our lovely cellist and best friend and best man perform with us at the wedding. It was lots of fun. So this song is called How the Mountain. We put a little couple nuggets in there. So the lyrics are How the Mountain Loves the Moon. So the EP cover that we released that on is Mount Cook, the tallest mountain in New Zealand. How the asters love to bloom, and the asters are the longest blooming flower in Colorado. And how the bellbird loves to sing, and the bellbird is a New Zealand bird. I love you more than all those things. So this is How the Mountain. Skies married the road, and she was kind. Had no roots, no ties to bind until you slow these feet of mine.
I saw you there on a pathless walk. You seem quite far from lost. You danced me around to the river's song, and I was yours from that time on.
And how the mountain loves the moon, how the asters love.
Kind. This next track is called Stone. It's off Lux Umbra. It's actually the last song we wrote in studio together. How we often write, actually, just on a side note, is I often come up with the guitar part and Danny writes a lot of the lyrics, slash all of the lyrics. And so when we're in studio, we were like, oh, we need one more song. And I was like, I got this track. I never recorded it, never released it. And she released it. And she goes, okay, cool. Just don't sing. I was like, what do you mean? Just don't sing. She, yeah, just play the guitar part for the song, and I'll hear some other ideas. I was like, okay. But to her credit, a good co-write, it does go very well when she has excellent ideas to bring to the table, and the guitar part remained, so that's nice.
Yeah.
She did make me change a few things.
And his last name, which is Stone.
Yeah, we named it after our own last name. God, that's petty, isn't it? But this track's called Stone anyway. And if you feel like doing yoga, there's a great spot just over there. So don't we?
We had someone take a step on that one, so it's actually pretty awesome.
Thank you.
Black Widow.
Thank you guys so much. So, who wants to hear a cello guitar instrumental? Yes, I'm going to step off the stage.
Oh, I see how it is. Sure you don't want to play cello? How you feeling, Alex? He's good, he's good. How you guys feeling out there? Really appreciate you guys sticking it out there, you know? It's a weird set, I know. Like, playing it start to finish, I'm like, what kind of band are we? I'm not really sure, but we're playing folk instruments, and that's what matters. We're having fun. I hope you guys are enjoying it as well. Oh, thank you so much. This is kind of like a more of a guitar instrumental originally, and then when I started jamming with this fella maybe 4 years ago almost now. Yeah, I guess it's been that long. So we started jamming together one night, and I was like, oh, see if you can play along with this. And he starts shredding on the cello. And I was like, man, I've never seen someone play like that. So once again, no pressure. But you need to recreate that magic from that night. So the song's called Into the Eye. It is on our album that we do have available. And it was originally actually named by an audience member. And obviously after we had the tornadoes come through Nashville, it took on a different meaning for us. But... Cheers, guys. I'd like to welcome back Danny Sachon / Stone to the stage.
We are on our last song, so thank you guys again for coming, and thanks, Isis, for having us. Thanks so much to everyone who's tuning in on the live stream. Again, if you're tuning in on the live stream, please support the venue and donate at the link on the post. This is a song called Twine, and this is the love story of a beaver and a sparrow. It does not go well for the beaver. Darling, you will go, I wish you would stay. I've made a little home of sticks and clay. Don't let it wash away. Darling, I will love you even when you leave. I can hear the wind running through the trees. Don't let it catch your wings. Underneath the night skies, underneath the pines, I hold you, my darling, with a bit of twine. But it don't make you mine. Underneath the darkness where we lie, we pretend that it won't soon unwind. For I am not your kind. Darling, I can't fight, just bury in sand. Hold back all my love, build up this dam. You'll knock it down. Underneath the night skies, underneath the pines, I hold you, my darling, with a bit of twine. But it's oh so fine. And underneath the darkness where we lie, we pretend you don't long for the sky. For I am not your kind, kind, kind. Thank you, guys. We're South for Winter. We've got some LPs and T-shirts and merch if you want to talk to us afterwards.
On Scenic Roots, that was South for Winter, recorded in the Isis Music Hall on July 24th. As with all of the shows recorded in the Isis Music Hall, the sound and the video is on their Facebook page, the Isis Music Hall Facebook page. On listener-supported public radio, this is Scenic Roots.
I'm Ray Bassett. Thanks for listening to Scenic Roots. We come to you from WUTC at the University of Tennessee at Chattanooga. Email us at scenicroots423@gmail.com. Follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at scenicroots423. Listen to us online anytime at WUTC.org and the WUTC app. For Richard Winham and the rest of our team, join us again next time for Scenic Roots.